It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, we're back. Welcome to another edition of Terry's Talkin', the Cleveland.com podcast. This is David Campbell, sports manager at Cleveland.com, your host, and alongside, as always, Terry Pluto, award-winning columnist from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. Terry, some breaking news this Wednesday afternoon. Let's get right into the Guardians, then we'll talk some Browns and some Cavs if we have time. We can talk about your faith column, and got kind of a different thing for Terry's trivia about memorabilia that I wanted to get your thoughts on. But COVID has struck the Guardians. Terry Francona has caught it, and DeMarlo Hale, and maybe some other people in the traveling party in today's game against the White Sox in Chicago has been scrapped. We certainly wish anybody who's caught it speedy recovery, and hopefully the symptoms aren't too bad. It's a tough, tough time, though, with everything the way they've been playing and everything.
Yes, and you know, they're always concerned about Francona with anything health-wise. It's funny you mentioned that this morning. I went and got the booster, old man's booster number two. So, I mean, I don't know how much it helps, but it probably doesn't hurt. So
that's actually the name of my new vodka that I'm going to roll out as well.
Yeah, old man. booster number two. But I know they always are concerned with Terry, and because of all the heart things and everything else he's had. So yeah, I wondered about that because I just saw that this thing on that it was canceled and that. So we'll see. Fortunately, most of these guys that have been testing positive, you know, have not had a lot of right now lingering symptoms or that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. And the team has held a meeting, according to Paul Hoynes, our colleague who's in Chicago with the team. They had a meeting to talk about whether they want to reinstitute their mask policy and bring that back. So I think they're going to consider that and see what other measures they need to take. So hopefully they will be back to normal there very soon. You want to talk about the events of the week, Terry? I guess we should get into Josh Naylor.
Yes.
So you saw Josh Naylor in spring training, and you were really impressed with how far he'd come and how his swing looked. And boy, talk about for people who missed it, I just want to recap real quick. So Monday night, the Guardians were down six runs in the ninth inning. Josh Naylor comes up, hits a grand slam in the ninth inning to tie the game and send it into extra innings. And then he comes back and hits a three-run homer in the 11th inning to help the Guardians to a 12-9 win over the White Sox on Monday night. One of the most exciting games we've seen in recent years. And, but you know, you saw Josh Naylor, as I mentioned early, you're probably not all that surprised with eight RBIs is a lot, but to see the way he's playing, you can't be all that surprised by it, I'm guessing.
I'm not surprised he's back on the field because, he was stunningly able to play. And I mean that as one, I think it was June 27th when he had the compound fracture of the leg. I forgot tibia, all those kind of things. I'm a little familiar with that because my nephew is a truck driver and had a real bad accident with a forklift and was very similar to what Josh went through. And he had two surgeries and skin grafts. And I mean, it is a rough thing to come back from. And Josh actually was angry a bit. He couldn't be on the opening day roster. They just wanted to go slow with him. But I remember seeing him hit a ball in the gap. And, you know, he kind of waddles around and that. But I'm watching him going, well, he wasn't real fast before, and he's not real fast now. And as Francona said, he looks great in the batter's box. And I mean, he was hitting line drives all over the place there. So that was exciting. And to see this is remarkable. Story on Naylor. When the Guardians make a big move, trade, or whatever, I usually call Tom Hamilton's one of the people I talk to, because not only does he work for the Guardians, but he's so well connected. And he said, you know, Tom's son for several years was a scout. He's now, because they want to have a married, want to have a family, he's doing something else. But he said, my
son. Is this Tom's son that played at Kent State and went to the College World Series? Okay, I don't remember his first name, but I remember that great run.
Yeah, and I'm having Bradley's the other son that played at Kent. Nick Hamilton.
Right.
And Nick's the one also that wears, I mean, he's a remarkable story himself, and he has to wear these real specialized hearing aids and that. He's overcome a lot. Okay, Nick texts his dad and says, if they are patient with Naylor, this guy will really hit. He says there's a certain sound off of the bat when he hits the ball. And not that he's going to hit a ton of homers, but just a really good hitter. And he was a first-round draft pick, you know, just like his brother, Bo. And so I always kept that in mind. But you remember when he came, he was sort of up and down and all over. It was like, oh, you look at this kind of sort of a little fat guy. You know, you looked at that. And but now you see what the patience has paid off for him and his determination. And probably I prefer a first baseman that's at least 6 foot, but, you know, because it does help the infielders, but he is pretty decent over there. You know, he has.
Well, played. And how about that play that he kind of got lost the other night? Mm-hmm. It was the
stretch.
The Guardians were in danger of losing. The White Sox had the bases loaded with two outs, hard smash down the third field line, and Jose Ramirez dove all out on his belly to snare it, got up and threw wide to first, and Naylor basically did the splits toward right field, held the bag, and they got the third out, and that set up his heroics later on.
Well, the classic thing too, David, two non-athletic looking guys making incredibly athletic plays,
right?
Because Jose goes down and then he jumps up like a cat on his feet. He fires it over there. You know, it does bounce. And then Naylor has the perfect way you handle that throw. He had his feet lined up correctly and everything else so that he was able to stretch and pull it in. So that was exciting. But, you know, Naylor's thing, you go down that lineup and you look at, you know, Naylor and you look at Owen Miller. You know, Owen Miller's been lost in some of this, how well he's played. You know, I was on the Owen Miller bus back in 2021. I just thought this guy was one of the best looking hitters I'd seen in quite a while. I compared him to Yandy Diaz a little bit. And actually, Yandy's been good, but not as good as I thought he would be. You know, he's been like a 280 hitter in that. But, you know, Owen got farmed out. He hit over 400 in AAA, came up, and then suddenly looked like he never saw a baseball before. And then bounced up and down and was sort of lost last year. First exposure to the big leagues. You know, Josh was okay last year. Then he got hurt. But now you look at this guy, Josh is back there. Here comes Owen in his second season. He's really hitting. Jimenez in his third season is hitting. And his patience is paying off with these guys.
Well, and one thing, Terry, that I've been thinking about is everybody remembers in the 90s, those great Indians teams back then. They not only hit a lot of home runs and won a lot of games, but they were so fiery and and they would jump up and down and they would be celebrating like crazy as they went. They were a lot of fun to watch aside from what the play was on the field. Mm-hmm. And you watched Josh Naylor the other night. I was trying to think, I mean, you can tell he's from Canada, right? And you can tell that he played hockey when he was a kid. The way he celebrated after those home runs, it was like he was jumping into the glass behind the net or something. And boy, speedy recovery to his batting helmet. I'm sure that
was. If I were Francona, I would have said everything was fine till you threw the batting helmet, because with our luck, it's going to bounce off the bat rack and hit you or me, and we're going to get hurt.
Well, they got lucky twice, because after both home runs, the batting helmet was, I think, Franmil Reyes did the first time, and then and then he did it the other. But the batting helmet was whipped into the bat rack. But
I suggest then they go like a sandbox. Then you can like heave it into the sandbox. It just
heaves down here. Yeah. But Paul Hoynes had a great quote from Tony Amato, the clubhouse manager. He said the batting helmet is going to go down a hero. But anyway, going back to my point, like I was trying to think of the last time the team had somebody who going around the bases, his shirt is kind of unbuttoned. Yeah. He's just, he's like, yes, you know, and just getting fired up. And the whole team was just reveling.
Well, they had
in
a little
moment.
Of that in 16 with Giambi, and that spirit was on that team too. Mm-hmm. And they had, oh my goodness, here comes an old man's moment. I was fearful of that. He was the first baseman in DH. They brought him in for 1 year and he hit like 30 homers. And he came from the Red Sox and he had played elsewhere. And so as we're talking, let's ask me another question. I'm going to look this up. This is totally embarrassing.
I was trying to think of recent players,
but
in franchise history.
He had that too.
Yeah, I know. God, I need old man booster number two, Terry.
And you're a lot younger.
But I was trying to think, like, I think of players like Kenny Lofton who brought that.
Yes.
And it's a, you know, it's 162 game season. And you, Mike Napoli is the guy you're
Mike
thinking of.
Mike Napoli
just came to my head.
Yes.
But you need guys like that to not only keep the game fun, but also getting to those moments is pushing the rock up the hill is such an experience. Mm-hmm. You're in a baseball game and you're able to rally at that. And guys like that who bring that kind of juice just make it fun. And that's what kind of propels a team through a season. I think you can't have too many guys like that. And it's really, really fun to watch.
Well, I know one of the things they were hoping, the Guardians were hoping, is that the young guys would be far along enough that you're not talking 90 or 100 losses. In fact, during the draft, Jimmy Donovan came up to me. This is when they were really in the depths of that Yankee Angels week. Remember, they just looked horrible. He goes, I'm afraid these guys could be really bad. I said, I don't think so, Jimmy. And I didn't, you know, I said, I picked them 77 and 85, and I stand on that. And I said, generally, young teams play better in the second half than the first, unless they're ravaged by injuries. And that is Francona's track record, because also a lot of times they're calling up people from the minors that are, you know, for example, Bobby Bradley, seen enough, goodbye. You know, this is how it's going. So they were hoping that some of these guys would, in their second and third years in the big leagues, now come across it. And perform. Remember, Josh Naylor was a number one first round pick. Quantrill, first round pick. So they, some of these different guys have been drafted high. You know, there was scouting reports. I give him a lot of credit on Quantrill because the Padres really wanted him. He was, I think it was an eighth or 10th overall in the draft. They wanted him to be a starting pitcher. They were invested in this guy. He couldn't do it. They finally did the, I'll put him in the bullpen and hope for the best, which he did help him some. But Antonetti and Chernoff brought him in and first, no, he is a starter. He's going to start for us. And they call it the pitching factory. We're going to put him into the pitching factory. And now pitching factory doesn't work for everybody. They did that to Logan Allen too. Remember that? And that didn't work for that Logan Allen, but it did work for Quantrill. But a lot of the guys as need to know, you know, a lot of the players that they brought, they were highly regarded in the first place. So it was just a matter of, like, Jimenez was a prime prospect for the Mets. And if you look, Rosario was at one point, I think, the number five overall prospect in all of MLB, both in Baseball America and Keith Law does it for ESPN. So these guys, in other words, the pedigree and a lot of these guys was there.
So let's take inventory, Terry. If you're Chris Antonetti and Terry Francona, and you're looking at this team right now, and with the COVID cancellation today and an off day tomorrow, they're 15-15, three games out in the AL Central. They're .255 batting average is third in Major League Baseball. I think it's still
first. How about
first
that?
In the American League. Yep. They're fifth in runs scored in Major League Baseball. They're second in RBI in Major League Baseball. They're sixth in slugging percentage in Major League Baseball. You got to be feeling pretty good. And I guess an unsung hero is probably, I mean, Chris Valleca, the new hitting coach, seems like he's clicking with some of these guys. It's still early, but they've dug out of an early slump and they kind of have it going here.
Sort of like everything old is new again. You know, they're off the launch angle. They're off of the pulling everything. And just make contact and basically beat these shifts, because the problem with the shift is, you know, we see a lot of line drives do get caught, frustrates hitters. So now they're just trying to hit it out of the park over everybody. Where how many times I remember I used a picture of Josh Naylor were in a story, and he's like leaning out over the plate, just like kind of whacking the ball with left field to left field on the third base line, because they were all shifted over on him. That was a weekend game. And the only thing I just want Josh to know was just don't get, you're not a home run hitter. You can hit home runs, but that's not what you do. You just hit the ball hard, you know, to all fields.
And even Franmil Reyes, who was in an awful slump, as we talked about last week, the cure for him was what? Talking to Vlad Guerrero Sr. and David Ortiz, who called him with some advice.
They got to call back because the last two games, he struck out five times and eight at bats. He had
right,
a great
just
stretch.
Going back to your point, Terry, about putting the ball in play, a lot of times when you have a guy who's supposed to be your cleanup hitter, you're talking about launch angle and how to get ball. But what did they tell him to do? They said, we want you to choke up on the bat and we want you to drive the ball to center field and try and get a single. And that would not have been the advice, I don't think, in previous years. Would you agree with that?
No, and because they were so into, you know, sports does this. They just hop on whatever is working or whatever is new. And this, the launch angle thing, and that's the way you beat the shift. No, you beat the shift by how many times have we seen a Guardians player, I've seen Jimenez do it. Well, they don't even know how to play Owen Miller. He hits the ball everywhere, if you watch that. You know, Jose, I wish he would do it more, hit it to the opposite field. But once in a while, he gets frustrated and just whacks a single to left. But these guys are beating the shifts by hitting the ball to the opposite field. I mean, that whole left side of the infield for these left-handed hitters is wide open. Wide open. I mean, a couple of times, you know, Tom Hamilton and I were talking about, it's like they're playing Andrés Giménez like he's Ted Williams in the old days, you know, when Lou Boudreau was the first one to invent the Ted Williams shift. And he put, you know, 87 guys on the right side of the infield to watch, to try to get Ted to hit the ball the opposite field. So I don't know what data they're looking at. And some of the stuff that Toronto was doing, that was interesting all over the place. And a lot of it didn't work with all their crazy shifts. So good for the Guardians and Valenka. Yeah. And I know this Victor Rodriguez, who's assistant hitting coach and Latino, which is very important with the language thing. He is also an advocate of using the entire field.
Yeah. And I think I heard today, Josh Naylor's learning Spanish because he wants to get to know his teammates better. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Cool. He is a guy, you would talk to him all the time in a clubhouse. He was like always in there. And he'd ask about any, you know, your family, anything. He just was engaging. He is like this big teddy bear, you know, he's just one of those kind of guys. So it's exciting to see him. But when you go around there if you look at the, you know, how they're playing now, I think Miller was a fifth round draft choice. Giménez was a prime prospect. And then at third base, Jose was nobody's prospect, $50,000 out of the Dominican. Then you go to the outfield. Let's put Rosario out there. He was a top prospect. Interestingly, Straw was not. I wrote a story about him. 10th round there. Stephen Kwan, to this day, never thought he'd get drafted number five. So it's a combination of a lot of things. But, you know, Kwan makes contact. Straw's in a slump right now, but he takes pitches and makes contact. Rosario makes contact. It was funny the other day, I looked up when he wasn't hitting and then it said, as of May 11th, it started on May 11th last year, he hit 300. And like on May 10th, he started hitting.
So Terry, you mentioned Jose, and I think there's probably not any argument that he's the team's MVP so far. I mean, we're only in May. If you look at his numbers, .297 batting average, 30 ribbies, 7 homers, 3 steals. So if Jose Ramirez is the team's MVP right now, who would be number two on your ballot if you were voting right now for Guardians MVP?
Well, I told you, coming out of spring training, my wife loves Stephen Kwan, and she got on the Kwan wagon. When I was on the Miller wagon at 21, she was on the Kwan wagon. We happened to just be watching a game in Goodyear together. So, but, you know, you could make a strong case. A guy has a .400 on-base percentage. And I think, like you mentioned, Naylor brought that fire in that. I think Kwan brought this disciplined approach to the plate. I mean, remember we were talking about, when's he going to swing and miss? And you watch, he works the count. And he's another, you know, he's spunky too now. He's got a little edge to him that I like. You know, the little guy, the underdog. So I'm going to go with him. Maybe the stats don't show it, but just because I think he's brought something else to that lineup. And then, you know, pitching wise, you know, that's the interesting thing. The pitching can get a lot better for this team, in my mind. None of these guys have really kicked into as good as they can be. By the way, I know there's some stuff about Bieber. Let me see. I'm not that concerned about Bieber right now. I know his velocity's down some. The game, the win seemed to get to him. But before that, he was pitching extremely well. And if he has to throw 90, 91, 92 in there, but he's got that knuckle curve going and a slider and he's working the corners, I don't care. That's fine. We don't want this guy trying to ramp it up to go 94, 95 like he did last year and straining that shoulder. So now if we have another outing like that, but he just seemed totally out. Remember, that game was played in like a tornado. I mean, the wind was blowing. It just seemed to really bug him that day.
Well, it looks like the weather's finally broken. We've got 83 degrees in Cleveland today, and the Guardians, they're in Minnesota this weekend for a three-game series, but then they're home next week for five games against the Reds and Tigers. So it'd be nice to have some normal weather. I mean, to have some normal weather where you can play some normal baseball, I think it could be a really interesting summer. I think the fans could gravitate to this team. I really do. I think
I was going to ask you this.
And watch this kind of baseball. It's fun.
Stick with me, David. These guys are scrappy. This is for you.
Yeah.
I've gotten at least three emails in the last few days. I meant to use one in my Hey Terry com. I'll save it for the next thing, saying I'm getting into these guys like I did the Cavaliers.
He goes, they're saying something.
Yeah. How he goes, all of a sudden, about a month into the calf season, I'm watching the NBA for the first time in 4 years. And he said, I'm getting into these guys. And he goes, I know they're not going to, they may not make the playoffs or whatever, but I'm into them.
Yeah. And like I said, the weather's getting better. The Yankees are here on 4th of July weekend. It could be a baseball summer to remember. We'll see how it goes. But
have you, I'm just curious. I want to ask you, do you see any parallel?
I do, but it's so early and the crowds have not, and you wrote about this.
I don't mean about the crowds. I just mean watching the team.
Yeah.
The attraction for the team.
No, I can't see it. And they've always had strong ratings. The team's always had strong ratings on Bally's and before that Sports Time Ohio. So I'm really curious to see if it translates to the ballpark. Cause I think that's really a great measure too. If people are willing
to go out. Here's one that where I'm going with this. They said like the Cavaliers play different. Remember the big lineup and all that defense. These guys are playing different.
That's a great parallel. It really is. Yeah.
And you know,
fans like that.
They like that. They're both old school. And then, like you said, Naylor, you know, Jose Ramirez, I've gotten a couple of people say, you know, if Jim Thome gets a statue and Jose has a couple more good years, he better get a statue. And I'll just throw that up there. That's a thought.
I could not agree more.
Yeah.
Could not agree more. And I left him out on the list of guys who bring the fire. He's like a smoldering fire sometimes.
He is, yeah.
He never stops, but he does have his outbursts.
It looks like he's angry. He's not, but he's determined. You know,
he plays angry.
Like, it's like he would be the kid if you hand him the test. He'd be sitting at his desk. You know how some kids like they're writing and they're chewing on their tongue. The kind of their tongue is out. It's like that. They're like they're into that there. So, boy, this has been fun talking about these guys, hasn't it?
For sure. Yeah. And they got we'll see how they do in Minnesota this weekend and where they are in the standings after that. So, all right, Terry, there's not a lot going on with the Browns right now, but we can spend a couple of minutes. We're coming up on the schedule release, which is tomorrow night, Thursday night, the 12th. And we'll know who the Browns are playing, when they're playing them, what primetime games they're going to have. One thing I wanted to go back to, we didn't have time to get into this last week, but I wanted to kind of settle this and get your final take on it. Fact or fiction, Terry, that the Browns guaranteed contract that they gave Deshaun Watson is hindering their attempts to trade Baker Mayfield because the other NFL teams are holding it against the Browns because of all the guaranteed money. And that's not the way we do business in the NFL. And, you know, Steve Bisciotti, the Baltimore Ravens owner, comes out and says, I wish they hadn't guaranteed the whole contract. I don't know that he should have been the first guy to get a fully guaranteed contract. That's something that's groundbreaking and it's going to make negotiations harder with others. And he's got Lamar Jackson coming up for an extension soon.
Better believe it.
So is it true? Is it fact or fiction? You think there's any resentment around the league or is it?
Hey, there is resentment. And here's how it factors into Baker. It isn't because I've mentioned this and it isn't the only reason they can't move Baker. But now you have a three front battle here with Baker if you're trying to get rid of him. Number one, he's coming off a bad year and surgery. That's the biggest one. Number two, $19 million. Hence, to try and get rid of a guy coming off surgery for $19 million, you need sometimes a little help from somebody. You know, I'll do this if you do that. Why is it, for example, the Browns keep trading with Houston? They have a relationship. But right now, I think when they look at that, say, well, you know, if you're going to trade me Baker, you're paying a lot, buddy, because it's a gamble to begin with. And I'm not in the mood to cut you any break because I'm not sure how good he is. So now, because they say, well, of course, if he were good, they wouldn't care. Just like nobody cared about Deshaun Watson's problems. You had three teams bidding, you know, like crazy on him. But that's not what we're talking about. I will say this, when the Browns cut Odell Beckham and his agent a deal, remember they went through all these things to allow him to become a free agent. They knew very well that the Rams or one or two other teams are very likely to get him. Now, if they wanted to stick it to the Rams or whatever, they would have kept that contract in place. It gets complicated, but because remember, when you're dealing with salary cap issues and all that kind of stuff, you tend to go to somewhere where you can get a break or whatnot. But several teams, it wasn't just me, Jocelyna Anderson, who's actually more well connected in the NFL than I am. She wrote the same thing. She goes, nobody wants to cut the break. The Browns are break on Baker. Then, so we got contract, we got injuries, and we got another thing. Baker talks to a rapper for an hour plus and says some really dumb stuff. Remember, he says some things about guys playing for Social Security. So if I'm owning Carolina and I'm saying, all right, I got this problem here. You know, they got basically damaged goods. They're trying to sell me. And he said some dumb things and this, if they're sending them to me, I ain't going to cut them a big break. You know, you 14 million out of the 18 million is yours, you know, something like that. And of course the Browns are saying, which is not bad. Let's just sit and wait. But it's part of the whole thing. In the same way, when you judge the Deshaun Watson thing, you judge it on three fronts. You know, the battling the civil suits, the contract's effect on the salary cap, and trading all those number ones, et cetera. If Watson ends up being the top five quarterback, or even they say top three quarterback, it's more than worth it. If he doesn't, you're paying the price either way. These things are not done. They're usually a couple steps all the time. So when I mentioned that, because then I went into Baker's interview and damaged goods, but that does come into play there.
So 97% other stuff and 3% the guaranteed contract.
Yeah, or 10% or whatever, you know, and just unfortunately, Houston doesn't want Baker. See, that would have been the ideal thing. They'd rather play Davis Mills.
Enough said.
I would gamble on Baker if I was Houston. I really would.
It would make sense.
And if it doesn't, it's a 1-year contract, you know, and they got all kinds of cap room. They're different. They're not in the same situation. I've been getting these emails and you've probably seen, why don't they just trade it for Sam Darnold? Well, that doesn't do anything. That's like an NBA, one bad contract for another, but they want to get out from under the contract.
Right, right. And he would be what they would call it, the old expiring contract in the NBA for Baker. So,
I want to tell you this. This is interesting since we're there on contracts and this. I was talking to a high-level person with the Browns, and I said, boy, you know, right now you are $7 million over the cap for next year, but like they're, I don't know, 28 or something under it, even with Baker on the books. And he said, Terry, you're forgetting something. We can roll over a whole bunch of money from this year into next year. He said, it's tricky, you know, but it's not as bad as that big red number looks on over the cap right now.
Yeah, and the NHL cap is a hard cap. You can't go over it. The NFL is over a series, like you said, over 3 years, I believe. And
yeah, so you can do that. It catches you eventually. It catches up,
but you're not – you can go over by whatever amount and make up for it the next year or vice versa.
So I'm going to do really some studying on that, but I wanted to bring that up because I've been pounding away on the cap thing and the fairness issue. Because I'm always interested to, I tell the teams this, I say, if I'm off base on something, how I'm looking at, you know, something factually, let me know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not an expert in everybody's cap. And, you know, I'm the only person actually that writes about all the teams here. So I have baseball with no cap. I got basketball with a strange cap, you know, as it really is, you know, all the exceptions and all that. And football is a stricter cap, but not sometimes as strict as you think.
So Terry, since we're getting into the weeds on the salary cap and other stuff, I thought there was an interesting thing that I wanted to mention about Deshaun Watson. We found out this week that because of various depositions happening, well, Deshaun Watson is going to be deposed in June. And then I believe later on, we had coverage on cleveland.com about this from Adam Parise, one of our reporters, but it looks like there's not going to be a trial happening for the civil trial until probably April of next year. So there's kind of two shoes that Browns fans are waiting to drop here. One is the Mayfield trade. The other one is what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. I thought this was interesting, and I want to mention before we take a break, under the new personal conduct policy under the CBA, the league and the NFLPA have both hired a disciplinary officer. Okay. Roger Goodell is not making the decision on his own anymore. This disciplinary officer considers all the evidence, and they can either say no action should be taken, or these sanctions are going to happen, or the suspension or whatever. If the disciplinary officer says no sanctions, Roger Goodell cannot change that. Mm-hmm. However, if the disciplinary officer says, well, it's a 3-game suspension, and Roger Goodell thinks it should be something else, shorter or longer, he can change it to be whatever he wants it to be.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So if there's no suspension, Roger Goodell has no power to change it. But if there's anything at all, a fine.
So then it goes back. Basically, then it's like the old days.
If then they it's rule, like the old days. Yeah. So they Roger rule, Goodell can do whatever he wants with in terms of upping or reducing.
Lowering it.
So that's something that we'll want to keep an eye on as this thing moves forward in terms of when they make a decision on that. So,
I mean, I have to admit, this is not my favorite subject, but my thought when I saw this about no hearing until a year from now, it's probably giving everybody time to settle.
Could be. So
because right, really, that's what the lawyers want. They want their money,
and he's got plenty of it to give. So
there's plenty of lawyers looking for their cuts. Right.
All right, let's take a break, Terry. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of Cavs, and then we'll talk about your faith column, and we'll wrap it up with a memorabilia related question on trivia. So.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We'll be right back on Terry's Talking. All right, we are back on Terry's Talking. Terry, let's talk some Cavaliers here. The playoffs are going on. Tuesday is the lottery for the draft. The Cavs are in the 14th position. They'll probably end up somewhere around there. They don't have great odds to move up. But as we look at the playoffs here, two former Cavs are not part of it anymore, and we're not even in the middle of May yet. The Lakers are out with LeBron, and the Nets are out with Kyrie Irving. Really weird, right?
I mean, think back. Yes, LeBron did win one title in L.A. You know, they won the title in the bubble. But for the most part in L.A., for LeBron, it's been battling injuries, all those things. Then they missed the playoffs. And it's just – to me, it's remarkable to see that. And I was just reading some of the stuff with Jeannie Buss, who's sort of running the team along with an agent. Rob Pelinka's been an agent for years. And, you know, they're kind of blaming LeBron for Russell Westbrook, and he's blaming them for, you know, not putting the right players around them.
Seems like we've seen this movie before.
Yes, I am. And if anything, he exerted more power there than here. Because I do not believe with David Griffin running when he was here that he would allow, or even Kobe, in them to muscle his way into Russell Westbrook. I just don't believe it, because they would know. The strange thing about all that is how LeBron didn't see that Westbrook would be a terrible mix with him dominating the ball. So you saw that fall apart. And then, you know, he has a year left on his contract. There's a lot of what could he come back to Cleveland, this and that. All right, I'm going to make my prediction. I think he signs an extension to stay in L.A.
And as you know, Terry, there's always off the court stuff too. And I mean, yes. His family's established yes. out there. His kids play yes. ball out there.
Yes.
He's got his movie interests and his entertainment interests, yes. the shows he produces and all that. That's all a big part of it, especially as yes. his career kind of enters its twilight phase. So
absolutely.
So do you think that Kyrie and LeBron, if they had it to do all over again, they would have, they would, do you think they're saying to themselves, gee, I probably should have stayed?
Well,
or not.
Well, knowing
each guy individually,
the little bit I've been around Kyrie, Kyrie thinks even when he's totally wrong, he was absolutely right. He just does. I mean, that's how you see his actions. The only time Kyrie was a good team player was when he was with LeBron James. I had one NBA person tell me, he goes, one of the greatest things LeBron did in his entire career was keep that guy somewhat in line. Because look at, remember, before he was kind of selfish and scored. And then afterwards, you know, goes to the Celtics and they just, you know, fall apart. Then he goes to in the playoffs. Now he's with Brooklyn. There's all this stuff going on. You know, the only guy that could seem to handle him was LeBron. But Kyrie could not realize that this is an opportunity of a lifetime to play with LeBron. The last year. Fans don't know this. The last year when LeBron and he were together, now they did lose in the playoffs that year to Golden State, but Kyrie averaged more shots per game than LeBron. LeBron did acquiesce to him and that. But Kyrie, as he told Dan Gilbert when he threatened to have knee surgery, I want to be the focal point of the franchise. I want my own franchise. And that led to the trade to Boston in there. So, you just kind of look at how their careers diverged. If nothing else, Kyrie had another year in a contract. Play it out. Play it out with LeBron. See what happens. You know,
yeah, it's, too bad.
It's an opportunity. And, you know, now he's wandering around and they're recruiting Kevin Durant and James Harden and all this stuff. To me, I kind of like the fact that you look at the teams that are in the playoffs. You have Milwaukee, where Giannis signed an extension to stay. You know, they're a real kind of – he's the center of the team, and they're around there. You got Phoenix. Chris Paul comes in with a bunch of young guys, and, you know, there. And you just kind of – Dallas with Luka. And I just – I'm glad that none of these teams were built, slapped together like the NBA's version of the AAU All-Star team.
Yeah, and it's sad. We'll never know kind of how that last LeBron-Kyrie season would have played out. We'll never
maybe
know.
You wouldn't have beaten Durant. But I guess what I wanted to say was, LeBron, I don't think regrets leaving. He wanted to go to L.A. He wanted to try it. He won his title there. As you mentioned, he's got a lot going there. In his view, I gave – in that last year in Cleveland, he played all 82 games. He was magnificent in the playoffs. And I just thought, you know, you want to leave and go to L.A. at this point, 11 years in your career in Cleveland, I'm good with that. But it is interesting as there all of a sudden you're getting to – you know, it's like he wants to be the general manager until something goes wrong.
Yeah, bring me in all these veterans that I want. Why did you bring in all these?
Anthony,
why did you bring in all these? Why did you bring in all these guys who can't play?
You know, as opposed to like what Phoenix did, you bring in one guy, Chris Paul, with your emerging young guys together. That's kind of the old style of doing it. I mean, I go way back when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was Luol Cindor, a very young player at Milwaukee. To help him win his first title, they brought in Oscar Robertson. They didn't bring in three guys. They brought in their version of Chris Paul, and it got him over the top.
All right, Terry, let's change gears here. Your faith column this week is an interesting topic. Your Faith in You column, which appears on Saturday mornings on cleveland.com and then Sunday in the Plain Dealer. And this week you write about why it's impossible to fix somebody else's life if they don't want to have their life fixed. And everybody wants to help people. And if there's someone in your family who's struggling, but you really make the point that if they don't want it, you can't put it on yourself if it doesn't work. And talk about kind of what you got into and in this column and kind of how we should think about trying to help other people and fix their lives if they don't want it.
This is basically true in sports or anything else. And I remember I had to protect the coach. I won't name him with the old Indians, and Sheldon Oker and I were sitting in the locker room in Winter Haven, just kind of hanging around. That was really the old days. You could just sort of talk to different guys and the coach comes in, and he was very frustrated with two of the players that he was working with defensively on the team. And he goes, you know what? I can't do anything unless they allow me to coach them. And he explained how fundamentally, one guy was doing one thing just blatantly wrong. And this, and he said, and the other guy was just not interested in playing defense at all. He said, they have to allow you to coach them at the pro level. And that's sort of in families. If you want to coach them, they have to allow you to do it. He goes, because some of these guys, I start to say something and they're like, well, who are you to say? Okay. Then from a spiritual level, there's a biblical story where a man had been an invalid for 38 years and he's lying by this pool of water where he would go to beg every day. Jesus sees him, comes over, and the man is paralyzed or there. But Jesus says to him first, do you want to get well? And I think it's a very powerful thing. And then the man said yes. And he says, well, then get up and walk. It was like a challenge there. And you say, well, why would he say that? But we can get used to being the guy laying there with people depending on other people to take care of us. And I talked to Father Walt Jenny, who was for years in Brecksville at the parish there. And now he's at St. Helen in Newbury. And he said, he has a couple friends in AA and even goes to AA meetings with him. He goes, and that's actually the question that's asked all the time. Are you ready really to get, do you really want to get sober?
Yeah. And one of the things that really struck me, Terry, this quote you had, and it's kind of the unseen cost if you're a parent and you have a child who's really struggling and you devote so much to them and you're not devoting attention to the other kids, or it's an imbalance there that can be really unhealthy. But this quote, you write that a lady once told you, a mother can only be as happy as how her most troubled child is doing. And I thought that was really a striking quote.
And she meant it the right way, but I thought about the other children, and I think most of us have, whether it's a sibling or some other relation in our family, who a long time ago I did a column called The Energy Vampires, the people that just suck the energy out of it. And that happens, and the kids, and I'm speaking really from the heart here as somebody for all the years at the Haven Arrest, the City Mission, and then or Summit County Jail. You have one troubled kid who's going through this, but you have these other kids, and they're just so sick of hearing about this kid's drug problem or this kid's financial problems. And they're, meanwhile, they went through school and they did the right things, and they're just longing for, it's kind of like, oh, they know I love them and I appreciate them, but let's get back. How are we going to fix this guy? Well, they're tired of that guy.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous thing to do. And also, I don't think any of us should allow how someone close to us just dictate our moods all the time. That's not a healthy situation.
All right. So check that out this weekend. Like I said, online Saturday and in the paper on Sunday. Really good read. So really enjoyed that column, Terry. All right, Terry, we got a couple of Hey Terry questions. We are running short on time. We're going to do these quickly. This first one is from frequent writer and pod participant Rudy W. He wants to, the subject of his question was, is avoiding an awkward situation with Baker Mayfield worth missing the playoffs? Number one, is Mayfield better than Jacoby Brissett? Yes. Would a healthy Mayfield be better than last year? Yes. Can Mayfield win at least one more game than Brissett during a six-game Watson suspension if it goes that way? Yes. Would six games showcasing Mayfield enhance his trade value? Yes. Would Mayfield want a chance to prove himself? Yes. Could one more win be the difference in the playoff seedings? Yes. Does making the playoffs trump everything? Yes, absolutely. And he says there's too many yeses here to allow the awkward situation of having Baker Mayfield in the locker room stop the Browns from keeping him around. What do you think, Terry, of Rudy's?
I think it ain't awkward. I think it could be toxic. That's different. Because Baker has no interest in wanting to be there. Baker wants out. And Baker burned a lot of things in the locker room. It's not like a defensive end. It's not like an offensive lineman. You know, the quarterback is different. And he, you know, he's out there. And Baker, you know, one thing about Baker, we know that whatever he's thinking, it's going to come out. And I just, it's over here for him. And I think for him to really revive his career, David, I think he needs a fresh start somewhere.
I agree. We've all seen athletes who are like, I'm never playing for them again. And all of a sudden they're playing for, but this doesn't feel like that. It doesn't.
Yeah, it's a quarterback is just different. It's the most unique position in team sports.
I think
you can have a pitcher who's a real jerk. Okay.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, but when he's on the mound, he's just pitching. It's his ball game. And I mean, I've known guys, it's like they say, man, I can't stand him except once a week when he's pitching for us. Yeah, the rest of the time he's doing his thing and he's, but see, the quarterback has to be involved, you know.
Well, and also that guys are laying their bodies on the line for him on every play, and you got to believe in the guy you're blocking for and running patterns for and everything. So good points by Rudy. I agree. I think it's a little bit too far gone.
It's not an irrelevant argument at all. The question is, and then the coaching staff doesn't want him back. I mean, listen to Kevin Stefanski. Well, it's fluid. We got to work through this. He's not saying, oh, we'll take him back. He's like, no, we got to figure out how to get him out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Terry, one more. This one, I pulled it from your Hey Terry column, which was on cleveland.com. And it's from Diana Grayson. I thought it was interesting. She says, hey, Terry, what is up with so many guardians sliding into first base? Were they not taught that continuing to run is faster and how to best beat the throw is when they were in Little League? Why do they not think it's the only base you can run through and still be safe? What do you think of the sliding into first base?
I think I could have written that email myself. It's exactly how I think. And I just go back to 1999 playoffs when sliding into first base, Kenny Lofton just really messed up his shoulder. Granted, you could do that in other bases, but it just seems like first base creates a real I don't know if you get there faster sliding or not, but
there've
like
been studies, Terry, you get there faster by running. It's been proven. And I think they might've actually done this on that old Mythbusters show that was up about 5 years ago.
To me, it just, your eye test tells you that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only time it really works is if there's a high throw and then you go down and slide under it, but how you don't have time to see that. I think they just think it's cool, but you could have your hand stepped on, all kinds of things.
Yeah. Some guys slide into first base and they want you to think, oh, look at how hard he's hustling, when actually I see it and I think, boy, that was not the best play.
No. And so, I will tell this, I mean, what about stealing second base? Okay. As a bad second baseman at Benedict in high school, when you take your throw going down, I am not on the runner side of second base. I'm on the opposite side of second base. I'm taking it there so that I could, you know, protect from a bad throw and then catch it and slap that tag down. So the only way you're really going to kind of get hurt is if like you slide awkwardly, or you don't like getting hit in the head with the glove. Whereas at first base, it just seems everything's kind of just all out of whack. Or it was Lenny Wilkins's favorite word. Used to say when things went wrong, discombobulated. There we go.
All right.
Hey, discombobulation sliding into first base.
So thanks for that question, Diana. And hey, we'd love to hear from all of you out there. If you have a Hey Terry question, you can email it to us at sports@cleveland.com, or you can hit Terry up on his Facebook page. Here's something else that I was loving. I was hoping we could get some response to, Terry, and we'll wrap up with this thing. We're not doing Terry's trivia, but this is kind of a little trivia question. Send us your thoughts on this. I got this interesting news tidbit. So there's the famous goal from the 1986 World Cup where Diego Maradona of Argentina went up to head the ball against England, and he put his fist next to his head, and he actually punched the ball into the goal with his fist instead of heading it in. There was no instant replay back then, obviously, and it was the pivotal goal that helped Argentina win the World Cup that year. The jersey from that game, from what's known as the Hand of God goal game against England in the 86 World Cup, it sold last week for $9.3 million. That's the highest price ever paid at auction for a piece of sports memorabilia. And the previous record was $8.8 million, and that was in December 19 for the 1892 manifesto that launched the modern Olympic Games. But it got me thinking, like, what Cleveland memorabilia, sports memorabilia thing, if you had the money to buy it and money was no object, Terry, what would you want to get of a Cleveland sports historical memorabilia thing that you'd like to have? And I got a couple I wanted to throw out too. But
why don't you start first?
All right. So there's two I would love to have, and I wouldn't pay like $9 million for these, but hey, if I was a billionaire, maybe. I would love to have LeBron's shorts from game six of the NBA finals in 2016 when Draymond Green kicked him. I mean, that play was a history changing moment in Cleveland sports.
Yeah.
And I would love to have the pair of shorts that LeBron was wearing that day, because it was such an important play that turned the whole tide and gave Cleveland an amazing championship. And the other thing that I would love to have, you probably know, I went to Illinois for college, and like myself, Lou Boudreau grew up in Chicago and went to Illinois and played there and is a Hall of Famer at Illinois. I would love to have a Lou Boudreau Indians jersey from the 1948 World Series. I think that would be a really cool thing to have, just because that was an important year. And it's the last World Series won by the Indians and franchise. And Lou Boudreau is a Chicago guy and Illinois guy. So I thought that'd be kind of neat to have. What about you?
Well, I wouldn't. He still has it. Bat, as far as I know, but I would love to have a signed Rocky Calvillo bat from when he hit four homers in a game.
Ooh,
that would
he has
be,
that bat.
I believe he does. In fact, next time I talk to Rocky, because I call him every couple months. By the way, how about Rocky starring in that Faith column on how to call, you know, calling a dying friend, and that. So I got to ask him, but I'm pretty sure he still does.
If not,
I want it. So that would be it, and signed by that, because there's a famous picture of him kissing the bat afterwards. So I think that would be really cool to have. And then also, I think I would like to have a World Be Free autographed jersey from his 1 year at the Cavs, where I covered him, because he and I used to play 3-point horse with him all the time afterwards. We were good friends. So
you ever beat him?
He would spot me HORS, and I couldn't beat him. I mean, sometimes the games went on a long time, but the thing is, like, when he knew he had to put it away, he would get like 32 feet away. He went great in this thing. He has such strong arms. So those would be the two, you know, because of the kind of the relationship behind them, as opposed to
I love those.
The significant.
Oh, so listen, send us your ideas. What piece of Cleveland sports memorabilia would you like to have? If you could send us an email at sports@cleveland.com, just put memorabilia in the subject line. We'll find it, and we'll read some of the best answers next week on the podcast. How about that, Terry? What do you think?
That sounds great.
All right. Well, thanks, Terry. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll catch you next week on Terry's Talking.